Good evening, and apologies for keeping you waiting for so long. Let me say a few words about today's discussion on energy and innovation and the update we received on stability in the Eurozone before I turn to today's events in Egypt. First, we've taken some important decisions on Europe's future energy policy. Working together on energy in Europe makes good practical sense. Why? Because completing the single market in energy is worth up to 0.8% of European GDP, and it would mean 5 million more jobs across Europe by 2020. And because if we make a 20% improvement on energy efficiency by 2020, we will be set to save each household in Europe an average of €1,000 on their energy bills. So Europe's energy policy matters, because at heart this is about increasing competition and choice, cutting barriers to trade between companies and countries, delivering security of supply, and reducing prices for consumers. That's why we must finish the job of liberalising Europe's energy market. We agreed today that the EU needs a fully functioning, interconnected and integrated internal energy market, and that the internal market in energy should be completed by 2014. Britain is a leading player in getting this fixed. We also agreed that major efforts are needed to modernise and expand Europe's energy infrastructure and to interconnect networks across our borders. This is something Britain strongly supports. Together with a number of Northern European partners, we are leading the way with our plans for the North Sea offshore supergrid. The Council also agreed that we must deliver on the target of 20% efficiencies by 2020, and that we need to do more work on the important question of the security of our energy supply. This has long been a British goal in Europe, this whole area of energy policy, and it's good that it's been completed today. Second, innovation policy. I made clear in Davos last week that a more dynamic approach to innovation and supporting business was crucial to Europe's future prosperity. Today, the Council's endorsed that view. We agreed that investment in education, research, technology and innovation are key drivers of growth and help create jobs. We've agreed on a number of ways to cut red tape and unleash enterprise, such as reducing bureaucracy around European research funding, changing the public procurement rules, improving access to finance. Make no mistake, there is still a lot more to do to make this a reality, and we will come back to the wider question of economic reform and a growth plan for Europe in March, which will include completing the single market in services, cutting regulation and promoting trade. But today we've made a start. We also discussed the work to strengthen the Eurozone. Now, I've made Britain's position on this very clear. We are not in the euro. We will not be joining the euro. Nor will we be drawn into further measures to further support the euro. But stability in the eurozone is in our interests. It is in our interest to see a strong and successful eurozone. So we will not stand in the way of efforts to deal with the eurozone's problems. Today we received an interim report from some of those involved in the ongoing work. We're not yet at the point of making decisions, but of course Britain will look carefully at what's being proposed and will ensure our interests are properly protected. Let me now turn to Egypt. The reality is that Cairo, not Brussels, has rightly been the centre of the world's attention today. The protests that we've seen have shown that popular desire for change is unstoppable and that fundamental political change is inevitable. And as much as yesterday's violence and brutality was an unacceptable step back, today's peaceful demonstrations, I hope, have shown that there is a yearning for serious democracy and rights that we take for granted. Today, I and other European leaders, and I quote, condemned in the strongest terms the violence of recent days. We called on the Egyptian authorities to meet the aspirations of the Egyptian people with political reform, not with repression. And we called for an orderly transition to a broad-based government in Egypt. And it's encouraging that today's events appear largely peaceful so far. But we also underlined in the statement today that the transition process must start now. Once that transition begins, Europe should move fast to support it, including through assistance with preparing free and fair elections. Because this is not happening in some far-flung part of the world, this is Europe's backyard. But we also, and I made this point in the Council meeting, we should be honest with ourselves in the European Union. We have spent billions of euros of European taxpayers' money in aid to Egypt and other neighbouring countries. We put in place carefully crafted association agreements, offering funds, access to our markets, other assistance, in exchange for clear, measurable steps on political and economic reform. Now, we have delivered our part of the bargain, but all too often our partners have not. In Egypt, the state of emergency has been in place for years. There's been no progress on the independence of the judiciary. There's been little or no progress on women's rights. Many of Egypt's commitments in our association agreement have not been met. So I believe we need to look again at our approach to these issues, and the Council today committed to a new partnership involving more effective support to countries like Egypt, and decided that Egypt's previous political reform commitments must now be at the centre of its relationship with the EU. And we've asked Cathy Ashton to refocus the EU's aid and economic effort in the region. Now, I'm realistic about the role the European Union can play. In the end, political change must be driven by these countries, not imposed from the outside. We will always have to work very closely with others, including the United States, but we do need to have a long, hard look about whether we are using our leverage, our money, and our influence to best effect. And I think we made some good steps forward with that today. Thank you. Very happy to take some questions. Lucy Manning.
Thank you, Lucy Manning from ITV News. Prime Minister, you said that the political transition has to start now. It hasn't. President Mubarak seems increasingly defiant. The European statement doesn't mention him. What would be your message to him this evening?
Well, I think we give a very clear message in this declaration today, which is that there has to be a political transition. It needs to start straight away. It should include a more broad-based government. And it's about putting in place the building blocks of democracy and freedom that will then respond to the aspirations that people in Cairo have. That is the absolute key. And what I welcome about the declaration we've made today is it says very clearly there's a choice here, that they must not meet these aspirations with repression, they must meet them with reform. The European Union stands ready to help with that, but those steps need to be made. And to those who say this doesn't enhance stability, I would say we don't have stability today. We won't have stability unless that political reform in Egypt comes, and it's that that needs to happen. And the faster it happens, obviously, the better for people in Egypt, the better for stability in Egypt, and therefore the better for us as well.
Gavin Hewitt from BBC News. Prime Minister, whilst you were discussing Egypt today, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, called on Egyptians to rise up and impose an Islamic State. Isn't that the risk you face in demanding urgent change now?
Well, I would make two points. One is that I believe the longer that you leave the process of reform, the greater the danger that there is that you'll get statements like that from Iran, or indeed action like that from Islamic extremists in Egypt. So all the more case to move to a broad-based government and political transition more quickly. It's the delay that I think gives that opening rather than actually the reform. The second point I'd make is a more general one, which is I simply don't accept that there is just a choice in life between, on the one hand, having a regime that does not respect rights and democracy, and on the other hand, having an Islamic extremist regime. We don't accept that it's impossible for predominantly Muslim countries to have a functioning democracy. They have one in Turkey, they have one in Indonesia, and I think, frankly, it's condescending to say that other countries can't have one too. That's not to say that democracy is simply the act of holding an election. I think that's what the neocons were wrong about. A democracy isn't just the act of holding an election. It's about the building blocks of democracy. It's about making sure you do have rights, you do have the role of law, you do have a proper role for the judiciary, you have an appropriate place in society for the army. It's all of those things built up over many, many years in our own country that we want to see in other countries. So we shouldn't be naive or starry-eyed about believing that you flick a switch with an election and that solves all the problems. But we should be encouraging countries like Egypt to move in that direction, what I've called a partnership for open societies, where those of us who have open societies encourage others to start putting in place the building blocks for those open societies. And it's much more about the process than just simply the event of holding an election. Sir.
Thank you, Prime Minister. David Charter from The Times. How concerned are you that the Muslim Brotherhood could come to a share of power in Egypt? Should they remain banned in this forthcoming process, or should they be part of the broad-based government you talk about?
But I don't support the Muslim Brotherhood, and I think there are, you know, they have some extremely worrying views and worrying antecedents. But as I say, the choice in Egypt shouldn't be between having a government that doesn't give you rights and freedoms that people are clearly yearning for, or having an Islamic extremist regime. I don't accept that those are the only two choices. And to those who say that somehow sticking with the status quo is a guarantor of stability, the fact is we don't have stability in Egypt today. It's not a stable situation in Egypt today. And so if you think of the choices there is a choice marked political reform, which if it happens quite rapidly, I think could lead to greater stability in Egypt. That is a better choice than either repression that doesn't deal with the aspirations of the Egyptian people, or indeed delay and the dangers that that could lead to giving an advantage to Islamic extremists. So to me, all the arguments, stability, democracy, aspiration, the interests of us in the West, all the arguments lead in favour of political reform. And that's why I think we should use the influence and the leverage that we have. That's exactly why I push so hard for a strong EU declaration today, is to make sure we make our views known and try and play a part in the right outcome rather than the wrong outcome. Lady in red.
Kerry Peer from the Daily Mail. Sorry to drag your attention to domestic matters, but recently you said that the idea of giving prisoners the vote makes you feel physically ill. In light of that statement, how are you going to vote next week?
Well, I'm afraid I don't feel any better about it. I mean, I've never changed my mind about this. I mean, I personally don't see any reason why any prisoner should have the vote at all. I mean, you know, when you go to prison, you lose some of your rights, in my view. The right to vote is amongst them. But we are in a bind in the United Kingdom. We have these court cases building up that present us with a potential liability on behalf of the taxpayer for, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands, potentially millions, maybe even more pounds. As Prime Minister, I've got a responsibility to the taxpayer to try and find a way through this. So we have a very difficult situation. A Prime Minister and a government that doesn't believe in giving prisoners the vote, a large bill stacking up, and so we have to try and find the right way through it. I think one step that is taking place is clearly this vote in the House of Commons, where the House of Commons will be able to express itself. I think ministers, because we're sort of participants in this, shouldn't vote, but I've given a free vote to all backbenchers and PPSs so they can make their views known. I hope the court will take that into account, and I'm having, as it were, vigorous discussions with our lawyers to make sure we can look at the minimum possible, or even less than the minimum possible, to try and get this done. These are vigorous discussions. I told someone the other day I was waterboarding our lawyers, but I think that's probably taking it a bit far, to try and get the best possible answer for the British taxpayer and, I think, for the British public and the British Parliament, I think none of whom are really very enthusiastic about giving prisoners the vote. In my view, these are the sorts of things that should be decided in Parliament rather than the courts. But in politics, as in life, you have to deal with the situation you inherit. And the situation I inherit is bills stacking up on the one hand, a political problem on the other, and I'm determined to try and find the right way through it. One more question. Gentleman over here.
Back to Egypt. Lee Phillips from the EU Observer. People on the ground we see are tweeting and so on saying that they're sick of hearing people in the West calling for dialogue, calling for reforms. They want the man to be overthrown. They want him to step down tonight. When you say that they need to move now for a transition, an orderly transition, do you mean to say that he needs to step down tonight?
I think there's an important point here. I don't believe it is the role of leaders in the West to dictate to other countries exactly who should be running their country in what way. That is a matter for the Egyptians, and I think it's quite important to bear that in mind. But I couldn't really have been clearer in what I think needs to happen and what I hope will happen, because, as I say, the Egyptian authorities have faced a choice. Repression, which we keep saying to them very, very clearly, would be unacceptable. And as I said this morning, if they go down that path, they'll lose any remaining shred of credibility or support that they have, or reform. And we've tried to set out some ideas for what that reform and transition might look like. But again, it is up to them to choose the right steps forward to deal with the aspirations that we see people have in that square who go night after night. But they're not Islamic extremists. They're not people who've been practicing violence. They are people who have a yearning for democracy and for freedom and to live in a country like that. They need to respond to those aspirations. And I don't think I could have been any clearer or more frank about supporting those aspirations and wanting to see them satisfied. Thank you once again for coming. Sorry about the very long day here in Brussels, and a safe journey home if you're going far away. Thank you.